sports ethos.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David and Isaac. We are back with a post game. The Memphis Grizzlies pull off a thrilling victory over the Utah Jazz in Utah, which is insane. Glad they done it. Grizzlies improved to 9-8. Final score of 119-118. And again, this is no longer the Hoopball Grizz podcast. This is the Sports Ethos Grizz podcast as we have transitioned into a new name. So, Isaac, this is your first time on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, man. First time Sports Ethos Grizzlies, man. New era for the podcast, new era for the brand. So, I'm excited about it. But, yeah, man, it's glad to be back on the program. But it's a big win and not at all what I expected tonight. I know I told you right before the game tipped, I was like, man, I'm worried about this one, man. This one could get ugly, but not at all. I mean, when you think this Grizzlies team is not going to perform well, man, you get blown out by 40 plus in Minnesota, then you come out and go to Utah, a team that doesn't lose many games at home. And you go out there, man, and get a 119-118 victory and just battle back, was down late. Bogdanovich is going nuts there in the fourth quarter, and you were able to overcome that. I think you were down six with maybe a little bit over a minute to go and able to win this game. And some weird stuff happened there at the end. And I'm sure we'll talk about here coming up. But just a big-time win for this team. And look at this box score. And one thing that you really like about this one is the key guys that you feel like are for sure going to be a part of this team going forward all had big games tonight. And that's what you want to see. All those guys stepped up and made big-time shots, big-time plays all night long, and it was just a fantastic game and a fantastic win for this ball club.
Dude, Brandon Clark.
Huge off the bench.
I've got to talk about him, and he obviously, like, he was not – didn't have the biggest impact on the game out of the players overall, but he was huge.
Yeah.
I've been saying, you know, Joe Mullinax started that thing last year with Desmond Bane, wanting Bane to start, and he would always all caps start Desmond Bane, you cowards. And I've robbed it from him this year. So Joe, I appreciate you letting me borrow that from you, but this team is so much better when Brandon Clark is in this rotation and him and Jaren are helping each other on the defensive end. That freaking block shot. Holy crap. I don't know. I'm like, this is just a dunk, and he managed to block that shot. I still don't know how he got to that thing. It was a fantastic play by him, and you know, like, just an overall. You look at the box score, the plus, you know, plus minus. He was a negative one, but like that doesn't. We tell you all the time, the plus minus is good. You talk about it. It's not really telling of how impactful he was, you know. And you can look across the board and see where other guys were positive or negative, but just huge minutes for Brandon Clark. Almost 26 minutes tonight. Had 10 points, 9 rebounds, that massive block shot, just good basketball from him. And what about that closing lineup, man? I saw a lot of people talking about it. I realized it was going on, and I got to admit, I was a little bit nervous at first, but then you look at he played 9 guys, but it was really just 8.
Yeah.
You look at the 8 guys that he played, and who else do you want in there? Who, like, you know, maybe you could argue that Kyle Anderson should have been in there to close, but it worked out for him. And I didn't even tell you, Zaire Williams was in the closing lineup tonight.
Yeah. And
he has looked, Ryan on Twitter, he was talking about it, and he said, Zaire is just looking better. He's not looking as lost on the offensive end.
More confident for sure.
Yeah, he's getting the defensive rotations down. There were mistakes that were happening early in the season, and he's a rookie. He's still going to make mistakes, but he played well. He done a great job closing this game. And I know, you know, like I said, I was nervous. I didn't know that it was a great decision. It's good because you need him to get minutes in these types of games, because you want him to reach his potential, and he's going to need this type of experience. So, you know, good on him for playing well enough that, you know, coach was confident in him, confident enough to leave him out there.
Yeah, I love it. And I've said many times, even being a guy who's leans a little bit more towards maximizing your potential now, and I'm not saying going out making any trades or anything, just playing like you're trying to win every game, not extra rest for guys and things like that. We know this front office looks toward the future. But when it comes to Zaire Williams, you take a guy 10th overall playing, and they started that from day one, and they have not backed off of it. You think maybe when he struggles, they might decide, oh, well, we're going to go away from this. We're going to play some other guys, but they haven't. I mean, they doubled down, even tripled down on it, and he's in that closing lineup in a close game against the Utah Jazz tonight, and you're looking at that like, man, that's a risky move, man, but it ended up working out for him, and again, they have not backed off of that, and I'm glad they stuck to their guns, because long-term, it's going to pay off. I mean, you don't really see guys develop without having it playing time, and he's getting it from day one, and I think long-term, this is going to be really, really good for him. But to kind of go back to something that you were talking about a minute ago and something that we've talked about before as far as the big rotation, kind of an interesting distribution of the minutes tonight. If you look at Jaren Jackson Jr., 34 minutes tonight, Steven Adams, 24 minutes, Brandon Clark, 26 minutes off the bench. So Jared and Brandon Clark with more minutes, Brandon Clark with more minutes than Steven Adams tonight. And we've got a call for that, man. We want to see Brandon in there at that four spot, Jaren Jackson starting at the five, and Steven Adams kind of coming off the bench and being getting more minutes when you're playing up against guys like, I mean, you like guys like tonight going up against Gobert, that makes it even more interesting because this is the night where you think that you'd have more Steven Adams, and that wasn't the case. So maybe it's heading that way, man. Maybe they're starting to kind of see what we see, but Brandon Clark, just tremendous impact off the bench tonight. The 9 rebounds, just fantastic. Some big offensive rebounds in that block. Going down, leading to a Desmond Bane 3. I think it was a 10-2 run to tie the game at that time. Just a big time block right there. And again, you look down this box score and just guys contributing all over the board. The starters, just fantastic tonight. And you look at Steven Adams, he only scored 2 points and he was 0-3 from the field, but I thought he played really well tonight. I thought he probably had one of his better games as a Grizz. I mean, you got to look at the other numbers, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, a block, 2-2 from the free throw line, some big offensive rebounds that kept some possessions alive that they end up scoring on that they really needed. I thought he played really well tonight as well.
A couple of really nice assists, man. And that's, you know, we don't talk about his passing. His ability as a passer is incredible for a big man. And while he is definitely not playing up to what we would like to see him playing, like we're – he's not playing at the level that I was expecting from Steven Adams coming into this season. And it's still working. Like there's some games when it's rough. Obviously, you know, they're one game over 500. You know, we've been talking about off and on all year how they've been Jekyll and Hyde, you know, good here, bad there, whatever the case may be. I think that if Adams ever turns that corner and he starts playing at the level that we kind of expected from him, it's going to be a huge boost for this team. But even playing where he's at right now, he's still making some great plays and being impactful for this
very
team,
impactful.
Only scoring 2 points.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been kind of critical of him as of late. I mean, this year he's missed a lot of shots at the rim. I mean, just bunnies, easy looks. Mm-hmm. He'll get the offensive rebound, put him back up. And we're so used to seeing those go in with Valanciunas last year. That was kind of his MO, and Job would go down there, those layups and stuff that he missed in the paint, those floaters, he tipping back in. Steven Adams hasn't been great at doing that, but again, tonight, I mean, I think he showed his worth on his team. And you talk about his passing, I still don't think it, we've talked about it some, but I still don't think it gets enough credit overall. I mean, he's been fantastic in passing out of the post, finding cutters, finding guys for corner threes. And he's a high IQ basketball player and does a lot of good things out there. You like to see the offensive numbers better, but even with free throws, I mean, he's been a lot better from the free throw line than expected. Had a little rough patch there, but he seems to be back on track now. So if he ever gets back up to that 10, 12, 13 points a game, that's kind of where I thought he would be, maybe even 14 with this team. I thought he'd be a little bit better offensively for several reasons on this team than he was in New Orleans. I think they'd be really good. But again, man, he's still making an impact on this team. One big stat tonight, I think that really helped him. And Taylor Jenkins talked about that this after the game. Only 7 turnovers tonight, which is going against a team like Utah, as good as they are defensively. I mean, that's a big time stat right there. Grizz with 24 points off the Jazz turnovers. Jazz with only 2 points off Grizzlies turnovers in a game. You're not going to see a game against Utah much where a team only has 7 turnovers. Also, out rebound Utah tonight, 50-46, 16-10 on offensive backboards. I mean, those are just two big numbers, and that's one of the reasons why they were able to win this game. I mean, the offensive rebounds, second chance points, 24 points, like I said a second ago, off Utah Jazz miscues. And that's kind of what kept them in this game. I mean, there were times where Utah looked like they could go on these little runs. They go up 7-8, but they never really got that big run like we're used to seeing. Jared talked about this in his walk-off. He said that they played this Utah team so many times now that there's kind of a comfort level. Like, even mm-hmm. when they go on these runs, they feel like they know them enough and certain tendencies that they have to where they can get back in the game. And, again, man, they were able to do that tonight. The second chance points was a big part of them staying in it. Those big offensive rebounds. We talked about Brandon Clark, Steven Adams, Jaren Jackson, guys just all over the backboard tonight. And that's really big going up against Gobert and Hassan Whiteside, who kind of got loose early in the game, kind of carried the Jazz in the first half, man. He really didn't do much into the second half. Once he got his minutes, they kind of shut him down after that big first quarter that they had. So, fantastic job defensively. Even you look at the numbers here, Mitchell, only 18 points in the game, but 5 of 20 from the floor. Jordan Clarkson off the bench, who's just a microwave player for them, only 9 points tonight, only 3 of 9 and 1 of 6 from 3. That's very uncharacteristic of him. So a good job by the guards defensively tonight to keep those guys from going off. When Mitchell, even though he scored 18 points, I mean, he really struggled to get those 18 points. Didn't shoot the basketball well, and I think that's a testament to the Grizzlies' defense tonight.
5 for 20 from the field for Donovan Mitchell without our best on-ball defender.
Yeah.
I'll take it, man. Desmond Bane.
8 days a week.
He had a phenomenal game offensively, and we've watched him kind of get off to a hot start in the first a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he hasn't, you know, we've not really watched him have it through the whole game yet this year. And he did, you know, 28 points, 12 for 20.
Career high.
4 for 8 from 3. But to me, his biggest play was the end of the game. You know, 1-on-1, Donovan Mitchell, he stayed in front of him, didn't foul him, contested the shot, led to a missed shot, just stepping up. You know, Desmond Bane is not known to be one of the better defenders on this team. Not that he's a liability. He's obviously not that. But, you know, if you have a choice between Desmond Bane and Dylan Brooks, 9 times, not even 9, probably 10 times out of 10.
10 times out of 10, yeah.
You're going to want Dylan Brooks guarding Donovan Mitchell. We didn't have that luxury tonight because Dylan was out with that hamstring injury. So, you know, you stick Desmond Bane on him, and he comes through. Ja Morant made sure to give Desmond credit in the post game, talking about, you know, a ton of credit, or he said a lot of credit goes to Des on that last possession, you know, defensively. And that's I want to mention something here and kind of get your thoughts and see if you really think that this is going to be the point in the season when they turn the corner. We heard multiple guys in the post-game presser talk about they had a team meeting when they landed in Utah about what team do they want to be. Do they want to be this team that got hammered in Minnesota, or do they want to be this team that just competed with one of the best teams in the NBA? And obviously they've got a lot of guys on this team that want to win, and they don't want to be the team that got beat by 40 in Minnesota. So do you think that was it? Like, that team meeting is the point where they, you know, plant their foot and turn and head the other direction this season?
Yeah, man, you get beat by whatever, I think 45, 43, whatever it ended up being last against Minnesota. I can't even remember what the final score was. I know it was 40 plus. When you get punched in the mouth like that, man, it's time to take a look in the mirror. And I think they knew that. And they had to meet one in Utah. Man, it has to come to a head at some point. I mean, they're like, man, we were in the playoffs last year. We're getting beat by 40 points by bad teams, just getting blown off the floor and not even competing. Like, I'm sure they asked, of course, this is not us. We're better than this. And I really do think that had a lot to do with what we saw tonight. I think it was gut check time, and they responded, came out. I mean, who would have thought this coming tonight? Again, I kind of talked about what my DM to you earlier before the game tip, and this is not what I expected. I don't think anybody expected this going to Utah. Again, at altitude, a team that doesn't lose a lot at home. We saw how much trouble they had with them in the playoffs last year. You 11-point underdog coming into this game, you just don't expect this. It's coming off a 45-point loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they come out and compete and never quit. I mean, you go down, I think, 6 with like a minute left in this game, and you could fold up the tent, and that's not what happened. They kept playing and were able to come out with a big victory. I do think a lot of that had to do with them taking a look in the mirror, and hopefully they completely turned the corner. Hopefully we're not talking about this Jekyll and Hyde team no more anymore. Taylor Jenkins has said over and over that we have been two different teams this year, and there, but they continue to do it, and there wasn't any answer for it. Hopefully, we have those answers. Well, hopefully, this is the start of something. This is the type of win that could start something like that. And you look at next week, I mean, they have three games on the home floor, very winnable. You have the Toronto Raptors team that's struggling on Wednesday. You have the Atlanta Hawks who have regressed to the mean a little bit coming in on Friday. And then you have the Sacramento Kings on Sunday evening. Those are three very, very winnable games. I mean, those are games that you'll probably be favored in all three of those games. And if you can get those three games, you're looking at being four games over 500, and we're in a completely different situation, because I looked up at the standings tonight, and they were eight coming into the night. They moved up to six, and they're only two games out of third behind Utah. And I was kind of surprised to see that when I looked at the standings. That is not kind of where I thought they were, but they're only three games out behind two games behind third place Utah. So despite their struggles and where they were and losing some games, man, they're probably higher than I guess a lot of people would have thought they'd be right now, probably especially we've seen that Dylan Brooks has missed time and you had some other guys out. So, I mean, things are fine, man. They just got to keep playing and can't have any more of these blowout losses like they're doing, man. You got to have the type of effort they have tonight. And if they bring that type of effort on a night in, night out basis, they're going to win more games than they lose.
Yeah, excuse me. You're going to run into games throughout the course of a season. I remember, I think it was, man, with the condensed season, stuff kind of runs together. But I remember before LaMarcus Aldridge went to Brooklyn in San Antonio, they had a game at the Forum where the Spurs shot like 58% on the night and something crazy, I remember like that close game. To 50%
from three. I feel like they hit every shot in that game.
And Aldridge just was not missing. And you're going to have games where you get beat like that, where the team is just on, everything is falling for them. You know, you need to go left, and it turns out that, you know, you can't go left. Everything else is right. Just one thing after another, and it piles up. But they've had a lot of those games early in the season, and it's not because the teams are having that good of a game. It's because they lost interest. And John Morant even hinted at it in the post game, talking about, you know, we can't just go out there and be going through the motions.
Yeah, you can see that in that Minnesota game. Like, they
looked
like they wanted to be anywhere but there. In that game, the body language was awful. And I think it was former Grizzlies head coach Hubie Brown from way back once upon a time. And I think he said it's seven games a year where you're just going to get your doors blown off. Nothing's going to go right for you, and everything's going to go right for the other team. And the Grizzlies have already kind of met that threshold, so that lets you know, especially for a team that has designs on being a playoff team, that's too many of those. You don't, especially consecutively, you don't want to see that many games in a close proximity that you're losing like that. And there's a problem when that happens. And, yeah, man, that's what we've been seeing. But hopefully we don't see many more of those. Because, I mean, you just want to compete. When you're a good basketball team, nine games out of ten, you want to come out and compete. You just don't want to get blown out these 20, 30-point losses all the time. I mean, it's just because that's just a lack of effort. I mean, when you look at across the NBA, even the worst teams, there's talent on all basketball teams. Even the worst team in the league shouldn't be getting beat by 45. I mean, that's just effort when it comes to that. And the body language was not good in that Minnesota game, but it was completely different tonight, man. They flipped the switch, and hopefully they can carry this momentum into a three-game homestand, because, again, three winnable games on the home floor. And if they play like they played tonight, they can get all three of them and be on a four-game winning streak before they go up to Toronto to face the Raptors for the second time within 7 days.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that day after Thanksgiving game against the Hawks. The Hawks have been pretty rough, pretty bad on the road this season. And that's, man, I hate to even say that because I feel like it's going to backfire on me. But I always enjoy that matchup. You hear the comparisons, the talk of Trey and Ja, and Trey was able to lead that Hawks team to Eastern Conference Finals last year, got a lot of help around him, and they've been a much better team after Nate McMillan took over. But that game right there, I think that one is probably the most exciting for me out of these next three. The Kings are going, you know, they just fired Luke Walton. Should have happened a long time ago. But Alvin Gentry took over as the interim. You know, don't know what's going to happen from here. There were some people that were kind of wanting Doug Christie to step up and take that because, you know, he had the fans. But whatever happens there's too much talent on that Kings team
for sure.
Not to be competing, at least for the play-in, man. And that's, you know, you look at the Hawks last year before McMillan took over, and they were terrible. They were not playing well at all. McMillan took over and then led that team to the Eastern Conference Finals. So a coach can make a ton of difference. Hopefully, you know, the switch over, getting Walton out and letting Gentry take over, you'll see something, you know, that they can be bad against the Grizzlies on Sunday. I'm fine with that. But, you know, I know quite a few Kings fans. Most of that, I met most of them actually whenever I started dealing with Hootwall. And so I want it for them, because I know as a fan, I've been a Buccaneers fan pretty much my entire life, and I went through some rough season with them. And so I know the feeling of, you know, cheering for your team, even though you know that they're going to be terrible. So big changes there. But, you know, with the changes there, the Hawks being bad on the road, and this Raptors team kind of still finding their footing, you know, I don't know. I'll be honest, I haven't watched a lot of Raptors games.
Yeah, I haven't really seen any Raptors this year. I don't know what's going on with them. I just kind of looked at some stuff tonight, looked at their record. They've been kind of struggling, especially. I think they've lost like three out of their last four, and they've lost to some bad teams. I'm not sure what's going on there. I kind of checked some of the box scores and see Akam is playing well. And, I mean, they got guys playing well. They're just not winning games. I mean, it seems like their defense is struggling. They're giving up a lot of points in games. So that's kind of what it looks like it's been for them, because that team has a lot of talent on it. Just like I said, all three of these teams that are coming in, even despite their records, they all have a lot of talent, so they all can beat you. But the way they're playing right now, again, if the Grizzlies play well and being on the home floor, I think they could win. With the Hawks are concerned, I think Trae Young is kind of struggling kind of with the new way that they're calling fouls. He's adjusted to that, and I think that's caused their struggles a little bit. I mean, he's getting better, but I mean, he's even admitted kind of that he's struggling with not getting the same foul calls that he got. So that's going to be something to watch on Friday night. But definitely you love that matchup, because even though they're in the Eastern Conference, it's kind of a team where the Grizzlies have kind of developed a rivalry with. They don't really like each other. They've got some kind of Trae Young with some run-ins with guys on this team. And I don't think they like each other much. And it always seems to be a little extra when they play against each other. So that's definitely going to be a fun post-Thanksgiving matchup on Friday night. I'm looking forward to that.
Yep, same, man. That's don't ever know what's going to happen with this Grizzlies team. Again, great win tonight, and I'm hoping after that team meeting that they do turn the corner. Jaren Jackson Jr., his best game of the season by far, knocking down the game-winning shot, jumped off of my couch yelling and screaming, acting like an idiot. My toddler was in the floor, and she just looked at me like she was down there playing with her toys, and when he made that shot, I was just like, yes!
She'll get it one day.
Yeah, she just hold that toy looking at me like I was nuts, man. But I was pumped, man. So happy. Happy for him to knock down that shot, because, man, the level of slander for Jaren Jackson has been ruthless.
Man, I can't. So happy for him.
Like, I can't wrap my mind around a fan base being so toxic toward its own players. And it's funny to watch it. It's so crazy because – this time last year, it was Dylan Brooks. Like, he was the guy that ever.
It's always somebody that's a scapegoat.
There's somebody that the fan base is just hammering on. And, you know, just dig into the numbers. If you dig into the numbers, you can see what this team does when Jaren's on the floor as compared to when he's off the floor. And you're going to know that he is worth every single penny of that contract. I think that he can outperform that contract fairly easily, honestly. And, you know, we'll just see. Only time will tell. There's going to be a lot of people eating crow whenever this is said and done, in my opinion. But, you know, huge night for him. 26 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 steals, the 3 to win the game, a massive block on Gobert. I was so happy about that.
In fact, just to win the tip. I mean, they had to have that, and won the tip, just massive plays for him. And I don't think we're going to hear much Jaren slander until Wednesday night. And if he struggles then, it'll be back. But at least we don't have to hear that for at least a day or so here. And I'm going to be glad. But you could just see Jaren, it felt like a weight was lifted off his shoulder. In the walk-off interview and even in the post-game presser, you could just tell how loose he was, man. I could tell that a weight that had been lifted off, because he hears this stuff. I mean, he's even had some cryptic tweets that kind of hint at that he's acknowledging that he's taking a lot of criticism. And I think, and I've talked about this only before, I just think a lot of it, I think eventually, I think it gets to you. You can see out there at times where he's thinking on the floor and just not reacting. I think he's worried about, he's got a reputation of getting a lot of fouls. So I think he's worried about that the ref's going to call fouls on him. He even talked about that tonight. He's like, man, we don't expect to get any calls, that you can't expect that. And he kind of backtracked. It was like, he didn't want to say it was just a Grizzlies thing, but I could tell that he was meaning like us as the Grizzlies, we don't get any calls, which is true. They really don't get any calls. I'm not a person that likes to hop on officiating, but it's clear that certain teams get calls and certain guys get calls, and the Grizzlies at times don't get that. Even Ja Morant, who is a budding superstar in the league. Now, I had a big night at the free throw line tonight. What did he shoot at the free throw line?
Was 14.
11 for 14. Yeah, I got 14 attempts, but there are nights where he continues to go to the hole hard, just get hammered and doesn't get any calls. And I still don't understand it. But again, I felt really good for Jerry because you could just tell how loose he was and felt good that he had a really big game. And hopefully he can build off this. But I think a lot of people, like you said, they're going to have crow served up, man, for fork, knife, and spoon coming up with Jerry because he's super talented and he just has to put it together consistently. And I was talking to someone on Twitter tonight, a hater, I'll say. I can't even remember who it was, but I was like, this is why they paid Jared. They didn't pay Jared because of the body of work that he has before this season. They paid Jared for what he could be in the future. And tonight that was on full display. This is why you pay the guy. They made the right decision because this is what you can get from a guy like Jared Jackson Jr. If he puts this together consistently with what Ja's doing, I mean, you have your two guys there, you just build around them and you'll have a championship roster. That's how you, especially in a small market, you keep your guys. You can't let that guy get out of here in a small market like Memphis, man. You have to pay your own guys because you're not going out and getting these big-time guys in free agency. I do think that they'll do a little bit better in free agency because I think having Ja, that's something they've never had a guy like that. And I think that does carry some weight. They're still not going to do the same thing that L.A. does and some of these other markets, but I think it'll be a little bit better. But again, when you have homegrown talent like that, guys that you drafted in a small market, you have to hold on to them. And you saw what he did tonight. That's what he's capable of, and that's why they paid him.
Yeah, I think one thing that fans are not noticing, and I've noticed a few people kind of discussing it, the way that they done this contract with Jaren, you know, it's there's no doubt that next year Ja's going to get a max, probably like $230 million deal, right? Like they're just going to back it up and unload it for him. But with Jaren's contract, they've got room for another max. And that's like the front office does not get enough credit. So now you've got Jaren on this contract. You've got Ja who is going to get maxed. You can go out with all these assets and you can make a move and sign a guy that's going to demand another max. Who are you going to get? Who are you going to go after? DeAndre Ayton didn't get his contract extension in Phoenix. If something happens in Phoenix and the wheels fall off and they're like, you know, okay, we're going to move Ayton because we're not going to sign him. Is that a guy that you'd be interested in going after? And it doesn't have to be. I'm not saying that I've heard that the Grizzlies are going after DeAndre Ayton or that I'm encouraging the Grizzlies to go after Ayton. Because, well, first off, I don't have that kind of pull. But secondly, he's just a guy that I know didn't get his max extension, but he's somebody that they could trade for and sign, you know, do a sign and trade deal. Hey, you know, here we go. We got this max for you. We'll give it to you. And that's huge. That's a ton of flexibility because, like you said, odds are they're not going to attract like these bigger markets. They're not going to pull a guy in like a Paul George or, you know, somebody like that because of the size of the market, but they can trade for a guy and give them the max because of the way that they structured this Jaren contract. And that's huge. Zach Kleiman in this front office does not get enough credit for the way that they structured that deal.
Yeah. And that was done. That was definitely done purposely. That wasn't just, oh, well, that's how we're going to do it. They knew what they were doing when they structured that contract. And one guy that sticks out to me, man, is Miles Bridges. That's a name that I've looked at. I mean, he's having a monster year right now, man. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Not shooting fantastic from three. He shot 40% on 4.4 attempts last year. He's shooting a lot more this year, almost double. He's shooting 7.2 attempts at 33%, but he's a capable three-point shooter. Man, the athleticism, and you know he already has a chemistry with Jaren, that really good friends from their time at Michigan State. I think he would fit in tremendously. with a point guard like Ja, I could definitely see him being a guy that they take a look at. You know, Jaren's going to be in their ear if that possibility comes up. But that's kind of a name that I would watch. I think that might be a guy that they could actually go and get. And I think Jaren Jackson Jr., being such good friends, I think could definitely help with that. But you look at these future draft picks, man, and the Grizz have – it is crazy to go back to a few years ago where, I mean, they were just locked up, man. They didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any draft picks. I mean, it just looked bleak during the time when they were breaking everything up. It didn't look good for them. But right now, man, they're loaded, man, with three first-round picks this year. And I was kind of looking at the protections on those tonight. I think the Lakers pick is protected 1-10. So anything 11 or below, the pick goes to the Grizzlies. So even if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, they're going to be a team that's probably right there on the cusp. So that pick is pretty much guaranteed to go to the Grizzlies. Same thing with Utah. The pick is projected 1-6. So unless something completely goes off the rails for them, anything 7 or below, that pick goes to the Grizz. So they're pretty much guaranteed to have all three of those picks this year. And there's no way that they're going to take three rookies in the first round. I mean, that's just not what they're going to do. So they have ammunition, man, to go up and do something if they want to do it. And I think we're going to see that because, again, they're not going to take three guys. Whether that's moving in a package and for a veteran player or they move all three picks to try to get up higher in the draft, we'll see what happens. But they're going to make a move, and they're stacking these assets. And this front office, in that vein, as far as future asset collection, and you talk about structure, the deal for Jaren to set up, man, they know exactly what they're doing with that. And I'm excited about it because I think all of this stuff is going to end up paying off in the long run. I mean, again, and this even usually have to go through a real rough patch with a team being deep in the lottery and stuff. We haven't even dealt with that here. I mean, this is probably, if it wasn't for a couple of injuries that first year, they probably make the playoffs that year. I mean, this is something unique that you don't usually see with a team rebuilding. I don't think we get enough people give this front office enough credit for that we're kind of winning in a rebuild. And that's just something that you don't see. But again, man, I'm excited about the future and the possibilities because they definitely have some ammo to go out and do some things.
Yeah. I've mentioned a couple times and I'll stick to this. They were a healthy Jaren Jackson Jr. away from beating the Trailblazers in the bubble.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and that would have been, you know, 2 years in a row that they're in the playoffs. So we take it for granted, you know, like we see what these guys have done and we expect them to take a step up from what they done in the previous years. And the step up, like, well, I won't say the steps sometimes are not always forward. Sometimes you get lateral movement before you can take those steps forward. And that is where this, you know, the trade with JV and Adams and the picks and all of this stuff, you know, I'm coming into the season said I felt like it would be kind of a step back. A lot of people thought it was going to be a lateral move.
Yeah, I was kind of more,
you know, we'll see, you know, like I'm still not sure exactly where that's going to be. I think that if we get this team that play the Jazz tonight, then, you know, it was definitely like a lateral or maybe even a step forward to go up and get the guy that they wanted in the draft. But that's something Kleiman has not been hesitant to do. You know, if he sees a guy and he wants him, you know, he moved up to get Bain. He moved up to get Tillman, moved up to get Zaire. He moved up to get
Aldama.
Yeah. You know, he is not afraid to pull the trigger if there's a guy that he really likes. But my question is, we've been talking about development, and he said before the season that it was going to be a couple-year process with Zaire. Do you really think going into next year that we're going to hear this development talk again? And are they going to move up to get a guy in the draft? Do you feel like it's a rookie that they're going to be targeting? And I got to say, man, I don't think that it's a rookie that they're going to be targeting. I think that they're going to package these picks either sometime around the trade deadline this year or in the offseason next year. Look at a team. Let's look at the standings right now. And you look at a team that has somebody that could help the Memphis Grizzlies and a team that's underperforming right now, the Indiana Pacers at 8-11. The Toronto Raptors, you know, you're looking Indiana, Miles Turner, Toronto, Siakam, guy teams that are underperforming that the Grizzlies could put a package together and go out and get a guy to maybe get that, you know, that third piece to push them to the next level. And I feel like it's going to be a veteran guy that's going to do that, not another rookie.
Yeah, real quick, go back to something you just mentioned. I mean, Zach Kleiman, at the end of the season presser last year, basically said, I mean, he said the path on a rebuild is not always linear. And I think he was kind of foreshadowing possibly moving JV. And I think they knew that they could possibly take a swing on a guy in the draft. And they definitely did that, a huge swing with Zaire Williams. I think he was kind of setting us up for that they weren't going to be all in as far as bringing in veterans, at least to start the season. But the Jaren contract, like you said, the way they structured it, leaves the door open for bringing in another big contract guy. And I agree with you. I don't think we could know if it happens at the trade deadline this year or during the draft or this offseason. I don't think we're going to be talking about development going into next year. Again, they're definitely not taking three first-round guys, and I don't even think they're going to take two unless it's like you might see them do something on the back end of the first round. But I don't think they're going to take two guys in the top half of the draft. I just don't think that's where they are. I think they want to move further ahead than that. So I think either at the deadline, I mean, we talked about this, but you look at this roster and their guys, what you're talking about, Kyle, Steven Adams, Tyus Jones, maybe even Brandon Clark, which I wouldn't want to move him, but you kind of look at the Brandon and X thing and they kind of have to figure that out, and Brandon would have more value on the trade market. All those guys could be possible guys that you look at to move, and then you have all the future draft pick and draft capital, even several second rounders coming up. A lot of things you could put together there to get a guy. And you talk about these teams that are struggling. Toronto, you look at a guy like Pascal Siakam, and you add him to this roster, and you're really, really ready to compete. So I definitely think they're going to go that route versus bringing in more young guys, because I think you're already trying to develop Zaire Williams, and you move up and get Santi Aldama. You have enough young talent that you're still trying to develop, man. You need to try to move with some veterans. I think that's one thing that this team is really lacking right now. And I think with the assets they have, I think they're ready to kind of take that leap forward. And I think we could see that even starting at the deadline.
Yeah, man, completely agree with you. You know, the asset management and what they do moving forward, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be tough to kind of sit back and wait on this to happen. But I have full faith in this front office. Kleiman has pretty much hit home runs. Some people would argue that in trading Grayson Allen and trading JV. But this is, to me, this franchise is in the best place that it's ever been. And that's saying a lot, because during the Core Four era, they were in a really good spot. But I think that you could definitely argue that they're in a better spot now than they've ever been.
Yeah, definitely projecting forward and the assets they had. A lot of stuff kind of just – and you never want to say luck, but during the Core Four era, a lot of that stuff kind of materialized over time. They kind of fell into some certain things. This front office that we have now is proactive. The regime under Chris Wallace, and Chris was a great guy. I mean, I got an opportunity to meet him. He gave me cell phone number. I used to talk to him, man, really good guy. But that front office was a lot more reactive than this front office. This front office is going to go get their guys. They're going to – when they have an opportunity to make moves, they're going to go do it. That the old regime was just handled things differently. And it's kind of a breath of fresh air to have a new set of eyes, a new kind of thinking in the front office. And so I agree with you. I think right now, as far as the franchise, I think they're healthier than they've ever been, because I think the ceiling is a lot higher. I mean, we talked about the Core Four era, and they did make it to the Western Conference Finals that year, caught a break with the Thunder there in the second round, some injuries. But I think you could really sit back and dream of this team winning a championship. And to do something like that, we saw what Milwaukee did last year, that it can be done in a small market. It might take some breaks. They got some breaks last year. But I think you look at Ja, and he probably hasn't even reached his ceiling yet, which is scary to even talk about. And you saw what Jaren did tonight. If he can be that guy consistently, you think about adding another guy to this, it really starts looking like that they could put a championship roster here together. So that's fun to think about. And I think Grizzly fans should be really excited. Even though they've taken their struggles here, I think the future is very bright for this team. And to have a guy like Ja Morant, I think, is the catalyst to to those dreams. We've never had a guy. We've had very good players here in Mike Conley, Marcus All, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, and what he was able to do on defense. But I don't think they've ever had a generational talent like John Morant. I think that's what he is. I think he's an all NBA type player, definitely a future all-star, and maybe even a guy that could be in the MVP conversation. I mean, right now, the numbers he's putting up, I mean, he's in that conversation right now. So that's going to be fun going forward. And I have confidence in this front office that they're going to get it done. And I think it's going to be a fun ride over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. You know, the Bucks and the way that they've done it, you know, it's a great thing to look at, because they essentially done that with, you know, they drafted Middleton, Antetokounmpo, and, you know, they tried to kind of build within, and then they realized that they needed that one other piece to get them over the edge, and that piece was Drew Holiday. And that's what they needed, a guy that was a difference maker. They went out and got him, and they were able to get it done. So, you know, kudos to them. Hopefully we can see the same thing happen here in Memphis. I think we're going to wrap it up there, guys. Anything else from you, Isaac, before we go? I hate to always say that we're going to wrap it up, and I do that before I find out if you're done.
No, man, just a great win tonight. Resiliency shown. Again, get down 6. Bogdanovich just going nuts there in that fourth quarter. It just felt like, man, he was knocking those shots down, and it was tough because I had just tweeted when they tied the game. I think they might have even been up by 2. I was like, man, they're right here, man. And to all the good that they've done tonight, it would really be nice to see them rewarded for their efforts. And then you see Bogdanovich go nuts. They go up 6, and you're like, man, they're going to come up just short. It's going to be a great effort, but they're not going to be able to get the win. See them being able to pull this off, man, and to be rewarded for the improvements that they made tonight, man. It was really, really great to see. So I'm glad they were able to come out and get this win, especially with Jaren Jackson Jr. just having a tremendous night, definitely his best game of the this season. And it was just good to see, man. So glad they were able to come out on top.
Yep. So we'll get out of here. You can get me on Twitter. I'm at DWill2111. The show's Twitter handle has changed. And I actually told you all the wrong one last night. Or in the last episode, it's at Ethos Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And I told everybody.
Not Hootball anymore.
Yep. No longer Hootball. We are Sports Ethos. The show is at Ethos Grizzlies. That's ETHOS Grizzlies. At Ethos Grizzlies. Come and find us on Twitter. We enjoy the conversation. Isaac, let them know where they can find you and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, man. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC_Rivals. And again, man, no more Hootballs at Ethos Grizzlies, ETHOS Grizzlies. So go check us out over there, man. Give us a follow. Definitely appreciate it. We'll be back later this week, man. Three home games, 3-game homestand. Going to be at home for 6 days, able to sleep in their own beds, a day off in between these games. So it's going to be fun. But until next time, we're gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.